it.
What are you doing with your hands?
Nothing. I was gonna eat a cookie, and then you're like, we're on. So put the cookie back down.
That's a cookie, huh?
Put the cookie down, sir.
So I just finished the world's biggest plate of Chinese food.
Yep, and we had meat on a stick.
And we've had some moonshine and a little bit of Maker's Mark.
Makers and Boosh. Cheers, gentlemen.
Cheers.
Another episode of Tomaholics, episode 38. Big 3-8. We're old. We're middle aged.
Your waist.
Ooh. 38.
Slimming down? Mm-hmm. Meth will do
I've
that.
I've been working on my flactoids.
Really?
Yeah.
Your upper flactoids or the lower flactoids?
Lower.
What about your gynecozoid? How's that?
It's fine. It's comfortable.
It's at a good weight now.
It's
I'm
moist.
Not like gonna.
You know,
it's
good. It's fine. It's really moist.
Did you clean out your Knever valve?
So those of you that are tuning in for the first time and are
we're
like, what the hell am I listening to? This is Comaholics, where we like to talk about comic books and drink alcohol. Hence, you know, the name. Uh-huh.
Winsforth.
My co-host Dirt, and I am the Apocalypse.
Howdy,
and
howdy.
We're going to talk about some all kinds of stuff tonight. Really, kind of full spectrum, a rainbow of comic books, if you will.
Like Skittles.
Skittles, yeah. So
Skittles of comics.
Just comics, just flying down from the sky. But they don't really fly. It'd be kind of like a flop. You know, they wouldn't drop like a.
Can you do the Flintstone flop?
Yes.
Let me see.
No. People can't see it anyways.
It's an audio
thing. Yeah, but I want to see him do the Flintstone flop.
I got a few books to talk about.
You going
to
talk about all of those?
I don't know. I'm just going to kind of throw things out.
Oh my goodness!
Races. Yes. So I'm just going to throw some things out there. You know, toss them at you.
These are comic books.
Books.
Huh.
Issues.
Printed. Huh. Oh, you've got issues.
That's right.
That's why he needs tissues.
I got a fistful of them.
Go ahead. Knock yourself out. Right. Let's get started. Get right into this.
So,
Apocalypse Comics pile.
Rachel Rising 21.
Sure.
This is
Rachel in it?
Yes.
Okay.
Rachel's in this
one. I was afraid she had risen out of the book.
Okay. Terry Moore. Sure. All very familiar with Terry Moore.
Uh-huh. He's the guy who wrote Ringworld, right?
Ringworld. Is that, I don't know.
It's Terry Pratchett. Sorry,
okay.
My mistake.
That's a sequel to Ringworm.
Yes.
Not to be confused with Alan Moore.
Wait, did they do a novel about my grandma?
Terry Moore's well known for drawing facial features, very detailed. He's also
draws
a
chicks.
Lot of very beautiful women.
Chicks, man, chicks.
And in this comic book, I've talked about it before. Basically, it's a
witch town.
Yeah, kind of a witch town.
It's
type
a haunted
thing.
Town. They killed a bunch of witches, and now the witches want revenge.
These people keep dying and coming back, and they're like half dead, half alive.
Possessed.
I'm still enjoying it. This one kind of centers around the first part is a little bit about Rachel. The second part is a little about Zoe. Zoe's basically the Antichrist child walking amongst everybody in this town and wreaking havoc. And basically this whole town and the face of what you kind of figure out in the last few issues, the whole world is in danger, and it kind of starts from this small town.
Did they ever resolve
Salem,
the storyline?
Salem, I think it's called, or...
I don't know.
Yes,
did they ever resolve the storyline of, like, the fat guy who was in love with the chick with the broken neck?
No, that kind of just fizzled.
Oh, that's a shame.
Yeah, when we thought something really creepy was going to happen.
Yeah, I thought there was going to be something good there.
No, but you know how her Aunt Johnny's... Did you get to the part where Johnny's lover... Johnny's a woman. Johnny's lover, like, poisons the whole group?
No, huh?
Okay, well, basically, I think she kind of is catching on that there's nothing but evil going on here. That, you know, Johnny's niece is dead, you
Who's
know,
Johnny?
But alive. Johnny's a
well,
lesbian
Johnny,
woman that's
lovers.
Like Rachel's
Number five.
Aunt or something like that.
Johnny's alive.
Johnny, no, not number five. This is not Short Circuit, okay?
I wish it was.
Here's Johnny.
I mean, just think of how awesome every story would be if it had Johnny Five.
Yeah. Number five is alive. Oh, God.
Butterfly.
Beautiful.
Beautiful. Hey, Laser Lips, your mama was a snowblower.
Oh.
This is the way we wash our clothes.
anyway.
Terry Moore, Rachel Rising.
Right, Rachel Rising. So, are you happy that you're still reading this?
Yeah, because it's actually a really good story. In fact, this is the first comic book I've ever read where a Volkswagen microbus was used as a weapon to kill somebody.
Oh, nice.
Hmm. Basically, Zoe, like, sneaks into this gas station. This rabid dog comes after her, and she, like, basically shoves a jar in the dog's mouth, like, so deep the dog's, like, on the floor, like, you know, already to die. She finds the keys for this Volkswagen. Obviously, she set off the silent alarm. The guy that owns the gas station shows up. She sneaks into the Volkswagen, starts it up, and smashes him up against the garage door.
Didn't
it takes off.
Kill somebody in Lost with the Volkswagen bus?
Yeah, pretty sure they did.
It
just came out of nowhere.
I think so.
So
Zoe's died in the microbus.
She's on the loose. She's
almost,
definitely
almost repressed. Lost.
She's you don't know for sure. That's what's cool about Terry Moore in this is you don't necessarily understand the entire plot yet.
Right.
Even.
He does a lot of
issues where, like, you know, there's still a lot of unanswered questions. Like, you know, why? You know, we understand at this point that these witches have come back to basically raise hell.
Get revenge.
Get revenge because they were all burned and buried in shallow graves in this ditch. So.
Bitches and ditches.
Witches.
Witches.
In ditches.
In ditches. Ditches. This is not Dr. Seuss.
God.
But this is a horrible episode, by the way.
This episode is brought to you by Maker's Mark.
No, I really like Rachel Rising. I suggest that, you know.
Okay.
I'm sure
and
it's
then
pretty easy to find.
Zoe actually goes on to star in the movie Mark and Zoe Make a Porno.
Oh, I give up.
Nice.
Yeah. Moving on. How about Deadpool Annual?
Okay. Deadpool Annual resolved a long-standing hole in the Deadpool mythology.
Right. That was created in the not-too-distant past.
It's been several years.
Secret Avengers? Was that about when that happened?
Wasn't he talking with the inner monologue when the Secret Invasion?
Invasion, I'm sorry.
Yeah,
Secret
yeah.
Avengers. Secret Invasion. About that time.
So suddenly,
like
Deadpool,
2004, right?
Yeah, Deadpool has this other voice in his head, and it just made everything funny because he had this other, you know.
Well, you know, just by looking at the cover here at the annual, it's going to be Madcap and Deadpool. I don't know a lot about Madcap, so can you tell me about Madcap?
No, he was one of those lame
B.
70s characters.
Okay.
That never really.
So not a lot of weight to the character.
No.
But he's in this annual, and it starts off where Deadpool is up on a roof, and he's going to take out Matt Murdock, the lawyer who is also known as Daredevil. He's got him in his sights, and basically Madcap shows up, and they have this, like, dialogue back and forth. Madcap's, shoots this, like, ray gun of bubbles, and Deadpool's like, yeah, really, seriously?
Like a Lawrence
bubbles
Wolf gun?
Oh, yeah, you got me. But it ends up being, like, this psychedelic trip. So, like, he, like, basically, like, dosed him with this psychedelic bubble gun. And he goes into the psychedelic trip, and in the meantime, Daredevil shows up, and then so does,
Didn't Thor show up?
Thor. Daredevil's basically like, dude, you need to smite these guys. And Madcap, you know, like being a big coward, jumps onto Daredevil, Deadpool. Deadpool grabs him. Thor hits him with a bolt of lightning, and they both turn to dust. Now, Madcap, just like Deadpool, can regenerate. Eventually. So basically, this cloud of dust regenerates into just Deadpool with Madcap's
stuff.
Yeah.
So the inner voice that Deadpool has had for the last 5 or 6 years, it turns out, has been Madcap the whole time, stuck in his head.
But here's my question, though. There's kind two.
Two what?
There's two inner voices.
Right.
They're only talking about one here.
Maybe you had Madcap, Deadpool, and Madpool.
Oh, like a combination.
Or
of
Deadcap.
Two. Deadcap.
Right.
So. And basically that's what's revealed here. But
so eventually Deadpool figures it out.
Yeah, because it kind of goes through like a timeline of Deadpool.
Like, it covers all the stuff that happened in his last series.
Like the big highlights of his whole Marvel career. And then at the end, he ends up back on the same rooftop And Luke Cage basically has this, he finds this bomb that Daredevil, or I mean, God, I keep saying Daredevil, Deadpool is going to use, and proceeds to try to kick his ass. And then...
You gotta think for Ben Affleck.
Well, basically, Thor comes. And Deadpool has Thor grab one arm, and Luke Cage grab the other arm, and he just says, tug of war! And so they both pull, and they rip him in half.
Rip Deadpool in half, but when they regenerate...
One regenerates as Deadpool, Madcap, one regenerates as Madcap.
Deadpool, no more inner monologue.
Gotcha.
And that's how they fix it.
I'm disappointed.
Really?
Yes.
I thought it was great. I mean, it in the realm of how the powers work, like, it makes sense in the stupid Deadpool way.
Yeah. I was a little disappointed.
No inner monologue now?
Who wrote that one?
Or you still got the second voice? Because that... was my favorite
thing. Acker and Blacker. Really? I'm not making that up. Maybe it is a
Acker,
doctor.
Blacker, Shainer, Gandini.
There you go.
And Forrest J. Ackerman.
But did you get the... you did read this, right?
Yeah.
What's the whole part with, like, Luke Cage, like, breakdancing and dancing and stuff? Did they get, like...
Ben Acker and Ben Blacker are the writers.
Right.
Acker that and Blacker. That is awesome.
They're a team.
They get an award for that. I think they're going to be the writing team of the year. Madcap...
watch out, Bendis. Acker and Blacker.
Madcap hit Deadpool... I think he hit Deadpool with the trip-out stuff. So Deadpool is tripping and imagining Luke Cage doing the little funky...
I thought somehow that Luke Cage and Thor got...
I don't think so. I think it's just the Deadpool's imagining that. He's doing like the little dance from the midget Twin Peaks.
Yeah.
If only you could see this.
Yeah, it's too bad this is a radio show again, because I just did the dance. It was great. It's like Bill Cosby at the beginning of the Cosby Show.
Well, sort of.
In a Cosby sweater.
Because the guy was with the guy.
With the morning pops.
And all
right, now we've all done our terrible Bill Cosby impersonation. Wow.
Next.
Bill Cosby just turned off this show in disgust. He's been a fan up until now, but we just lost.
I'm just going to start hitting some doubles and triples and home runs here. Walking Dead, 118.
All right. Wait, didn't there 119 come out?
No. Well, no, this is last.
Oh, yeah, 118 is the latest, yeah.
All Out War. Rick's after Negan.
All right, so what is the story behind All Out War?
Well, where we left off with our heroes.
I don't think we talked about this since, like, 112 was probably...
No, we talked about it sooner than that.
You think
Get
so?
It, yeah. I'm just saying. Okay, where we left off our hero, basically Rick had assembled Hilltop, what's that dude's name, Ezekiel?
The Kingdom.
Hilltop and the Kingdom to go face Negan.
Well, wait, there's Hilltop... The Kingdom, and then wherever Rick and his groups were, whatever that neighborhood was, the gated community.
It was called Circle Drive.
It was called the Cul-de-Sac Crew. I don't know.
It's Circle Drive.
The
Cul-de-Kings. Negan basically tries to call him out back, and basically is like, no, I'm not giving up. He has the Hilltop guy in his possession, the leader
of the Hilltop.
Throws him in a pit of zombies, and then basically all-out war begins.
Now, what was the big strategic move that Rick used in the last issue?
Very cool. So they are hiding behind basically like a school bus in the shootout. And all the noise, of course, does what?
Attracts zombies.
So he starts having all his guys shoot the windows of the building
to make all
that
this noise.
Negan and his men are hiding in. So that the zombies are attracted to the noise and they swarm the building, and then Rick and his crew can escape.
Clever.
Okay.
Yeah, it was one of those moves where it's like, that makes so much strategic sense, you know?
Yeah, use your environment.
Because Negan, at one point, he's like, all my snipers are dead. What are these guys shooting at?
Right.
And he just kind of looks up, and the glass is just kind of like coming down, and he's like, oh, crap. And you just see the swarm of zombies moving in.
Did you read 118?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. In this, it basically features Ezekiel is doing a lot of the narration in this. Are we going to do any spoilers on this?
We'll do. I mean, don't give away like the very end, I guess, maybe. Well, no, it's been out. Go ahead.
Well, Shiva dies.
Who
the
is
tiger
Shiva?
Dies. The tiger dies. His pet tiger. And basically, in Ezekiel's mind, the tiger is dying to save Ezekiel. Like, the tiger saves Ezekiel at one point when he's running away, and then kind of stays with the swarm and kind of bats and fights them off. So that way the swarm just keeps coming to the tiger. In his mind, that's what he thinks he's doing. In my mind, I think the tiger just got... He got punked. No tiger would just...
Right. This right here is a key moment in this issue.
Oh, really? That because he turned so fast?
Aha! Explain it to the listeners.
Oh, okay. Well, Ezekiel is basically... When the fight broke out, Negan's gang is winning. Ezekiel's team basically disbands. Because not only do they have this overrun zombie cloud, but Negan's firepower is just kind of outmatching them. Anyways, Ezekiel's getting away. One of his buddies, I can't remember which the character is down and dead. And, like, in that moment, he turns to a zombie.
Like
that.
Yeah, almost
like
instantaneously.
Quickly. Within minutes. Wow.
Like, it's like the virus...
Like, in the same...
Speeding up.
The virus has mutated now.
Right.
So now it's like, I stab you, you go, ugh.
So that's now, pretty freaky stuff. That's like 28 days later kind of
so
stuff.
So now there's no more, like, well, at least you can, like, knock them down, get away, or, you
try
know,
try and chop some body part off to save you.
Right. It's like, if there's another human guy coming at you now, you have to shoot them in
and
the head or...
There's a lot of, like, two-page spread. There's, like, two or three two-page spread pictures in this. They really kind of went all out with the art.
Well, there's another two-page spread with Maggie.
Yes.
Where Maggie's at Hilltop.
And, you know, I didn't think that was really a critical two-page spread. Like, when
yeah,
it turned
I know.
Out, I was just like, really? A two-page spread of just Maggie
But
going...
here's the key. Here's the key.
Okay.
Maggie saw Glenn get murdered.
Right.
And she blamed that death on Rick.
Oh, yeah. We kind of... They brought it back. They, like, re-highlighted Maggie being...
So what brings... So what makes that a key moment... Is that Maggie realizes that whatever Rick is doing, she realizes that Rick knows what he's doing. And yes, there are consequences along the way. She's got weird eyes in that, though.
They did her face differently, don't you think?
She's
not as pretty.
No. She looks like one of those pugs.
A pug?
One of those dogs.
No, she looks like Liza Minnelli.
Liza Minnelli. Yeah, she does! So Liza Minnelli is now in The Walking Dead.
Yeah.
So her face is being pressed.
Young Liza Minnelli. No, you know, this would not work as old Liza Minnelli.
Oh, no, current.
Lucille, too, has made it to The Walking Dead. So basically,
maybe
she
the
says
dead
that.
Version could be the old Liza
She
Minnelli.
Believes in
Walking
Rick Grimes.
Dead face problems.
She believes in Rick Grimes.
Right.
So this is kind of shifting. Like, she realizes she's going to have to go along with it and understand whatever
right.
Rick is up to, is that's what the plan's got to be.
And, you know, we know at this point that, you know, Rick is off, because they split up and go fight other outposts and try to, like, keep them from getting together and forming another
like,
army.
Like, now that they've attacked the headquarters, they know it's going to be a while before word gets out to the outpost that headquarters are under attack.
Right.
So they go to attack the outpost.
Right.
And that's where
well,
Ezekiel's men, they attack the outpost, but the outpost mm-hmm. is too strong for them, and
right.
that's when... They notice that the zombie outbreak is changing.
So there's the tiger coming to the rescue. It's pretty good.
That's a good rendition of a tiger.
I think so.
Yeah.
That's what. Yeah.
Gets the job done.
Right.
It could be a bobcat. I mean, really. Yeah.
And at the end, basically, you know, he's basically having this narration with Michonne, and
his girlfriend.
Yeah. So you learn a few things in this. Something very big about them turning so quickly. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, this is kind of a key issue. So, 118.
There you go.
Your turn.
No, go ahead. Keep going.
I need a break. I need you to start
oh,
up a little
you need
bit.
A break. I'll give you
I got to warm up my mind.
Call your kneecap.
Okay, hey, how about... All right, well, I'll do some filler here. How about Superior Spider-Man? Have you gotten all the way up to 22?
I have.
Okay.
He's fighting Venom.
Right.
Venom is Flash Thompson, but he doesn't really seem to care.
He finds out at the end of this, though, it is Flash Thompson.
He wants to recapture the symbiote.
Right.
And then realizes that he's made a mistake because the symbiote is actually under control and it's mm-hmm. a good thing. And when you knock it loose from Flash Thompson, then the symbiote goes crazy. It
turns into regular symbiote.
And yeah, it turns back into mean Venom. So he's kind of miscalculated.
What do you think about his relationship with the little person?
The midget?
I mean, he has this like little person relationship. And like at first she was like his tutor.
And then they fell
like,
in love.
Now it's like a love affair. Like, he's real sweet on her.
It would make sense.
And what's the point? I'm just, why?
It would make sense, though.
Is this,
though,
like, to appeal to, like... No. Yeah, because
there's a little person lobby that is
like, you know what? I really like Superior Spider-Man. But you know what? You don't make comic books for me, for the little person.
You know, there's a lot of political commentary you could put into that.
I
want to
see
whole idea.
A little person Venom.
It just looks like a little
Venom
black
man.
Oh, look, it's Ink Spot. There he goes.
Blotch.
Blotch.
The blotch.
No, I think it makes sense that Octavius would not be
attracted to the typical...
No, would not be worried. He would put mind over looks.
Okay.
Because that's the type of person he is.
And she is. She's like one of those, like, physicists.
I mean, she's pretty for a little person. She's not, like, hideous with a giant hairy mole on her cheek or something.
Mole.
And she's an attractive little person, so it makes sense that they'd be together, I think. She's attracted to his mind. He's attracted to her mind, you know.
I think you're attracted to big person dirt.
I'm attracted to big people.
Yeah. Hmm. Okay. Like, anything more you want to say
like
about
Kareem Abdul-Jabbar?
The latest. I thought the cover was really cool too. In fact, it kind of, you know, they always throw you off. You think when you look at the cover, you think, oh, he's going to be attached to the symbiote somehow. Hmm. Maybe that's in the near future. I don't know.
I don't think so.
So, still big fan of Doc Ock being Spider-Man. You have no desire for Peter Parker to come back.
Nope.
You heard it.
Still happy with
the dirt hath spoken.
Doc what Hack. If he gets cut in half, and then they become two different people again,
ooh,
just like Deadpool?
Yes, and Madcap,
Spider Pool, and
Spider
and Madman,
Spider Venom Pool Cap. All right, how about Batman and Two Face?
I don't think I read that one.
This one was really good.
Is that part two of the story of the Irish chick?
Yeah, I think so. Yes.
Okay, I haven't read part two. I read part one, but I haven't read part two.
This basically centers around, obviously, around Two-Face.
There's this woman who is like, she's like the last family member as part of this like gang. All the men have died off, and so it's like the people in the gang are not sure they can follow a woman. She's been in Ireland, kind of controlling things from afar, so now she comes to Gotham so that she can have, you know, a hand in it and prove that she can run this gang and whatever. And,
well, the gangs are
Two-Face and Batman get involved in hijinks ensue.
You learn about Two-Face's origin. Mm-hmm. Basically,
what, the district
according to this,
acid thrown in his face?
According to this crazy Irish woman pours acid on his face, like a jar of acid on his face.
Right.
So she's the one who did it.
And she also killed
his wife,
yeah.
Or girlfriend or whatever.
Right. So a little backstory. Is that true to...
Well, it was a dude who did it before, but it was a gang
right.
person, so they made it a chick for the new 52.
Oh, okay. So basically the same premise.
Equal opportunity gangsters. In
so,
the
you know, little people and you know...
Strong female villains
strong
and strong female
yes.
little people.
I'm down.
That's
I
what
like
this show's
it,
about.
Know?
Now
I
what
like
we need
it.
Is a strong female little person villain.
Ooh.
You know, that I don't think has been explored... Fully
blotch,
in blotch, the
blotch,
the blotch. Yeah, there you go. There's the shot. It's pretty brutal.
Her throwing the acid.
It's a very graphic.
Oh,
version.
So in this she straps him down.
Yeah, she straps
okay,
him down.
Okay, because in the comic, he's.
And this is after she stabbed his wife.
Right. In the comic, he's at a trial. He's a district attorney prosecuting a trial, and they have some guy
monster.
Like in the gallery, like so the mobster can get away.
But in the end, Batman captures the Irish woman.
But he's got to capture her to keep her safe, right?
I guess, sure.
Yeah, whatever.
Whatever you say, man. All right, we already talked about Superior. Because I had some catch-up to do there.
You had a lot of stuff.
What about Absolution? What'd you think?
I'm trying to remember what was the end of 5.
Or did you read Happy Kitty?
I read Happy Kitty.
Oh, let's talk about Happy Kitty. Okay, so Happy Kitty is one of the villain characters from the first Absolution series, and she is this, like...
She becomes the sidekick in the second series.
She ends up being good?
Well, kinda.
She's still a killer.
Okay, let's put it this way. You don't really understand her motivations exactly.
But you learn it in this.
But you learn in there.
So, and this is her backstory of how she became to be. Basically, her parents were drug addicts. This mob boss comes to collect, kills the parents in front of her, and the whole time she's just sitting there playing video games. You know, while her parents are being slaughtered. They don't really know what to do with her. They think she's basically like a deaf mute because she doesn't respond to her parents being slaughtered or even seem to care or say anything, really. So they go to, like, take her away, and she busts out these, like, super karate moves and, like, kick the henchmen's asses, and the boss is like, what is your problem? She's just a little girl, you know? And then basically decides he's going to take her under his wing and train her to be an assassin.
Oh, okay. You take the orphan, you train him to be an assassin, and, right. You know.
So then he teams her up with some whore to basically raise her while she's being trained by, you know, trained killers.
Right, right.
So that's her background.
So she really, like, doesn't care. She doesn't really know what she's doing, and she doesn't really care. She's just kind of somewhat autistic or whatever. She just wants to play her games. So they just kind of take the game away and direct her at people, and she just slaughters them, and then gives her the game back, and then that's her reward.
And then an interesting story is, one of the motivations is they give her a pet tiger. Or is it a lion? It's a lion. No, it's a tiger.
Yeah.
When she is on good behavior or when she does a good mission, she gets to spend time with the tiger. But she went on a mission and didn't fulfill the mission.
Yeah, there was somebody that begged for mercy, and so she let him live.
Right.
And so they kill the tiger.
Well, no, the villain gives her the option. He's like, you know, you have to chop the tiger's paw off, or we're going to kill it. So then, right when it's, you know, the moment to act, she just kills everybody in the room, including the boss, and walks away. So then she declares her independence, basically, by doing that. It's very, like, Kill Bill.
Right.
Yeah. It was really well done. Like, I loved this issue. I mean, for being an origin story, I thought it was really well done. That's one thing I really liked about Absolution, is that the characters, it's the same thing. We'll talk about Super a little bit later, but one of the reasons why I like Super is the same reason I like Absolution. The characters are not simply analogs of other characters. It's not like, well, this is our version of Superman. This is our version of Batman. It's like, you know, they thought through original characters.
I'm the spandex master.
Don't they have this character in Kill Bill?
Kinda.
Almost. But
what's that one girl's name with the she had the
right.
the
but she was star. But she was like slutty schoolgirl whatever. That's not what this girl is.
Right, no.
But it's weird because, like, they don't outright explain exactly why she is the way she is, other than the fact you just kind of gather she is just that crazy.
Well, her parents were drug addicts. They probably didn't ever send her to school or anything, so all she did was just sit there and play games.
Video games.
Practice karate moves in the garage. I don't know. But you see enough violence, you pick up some violence.
I guess so. So I'm not really going to talk about Absolution, because you haven't read it yet.
No, I've read it. I just don't remember. I read it so long ago. I'm trying to remember how it ended. They poison...
He's got that poison in him.
Okay, so here's the thing. I actually talked to Christos Gage on Twitter about that. Because the villain, whatever you hit him with, he immediately, like, builds a tolerance or a defense for it.
Yeah.
So because nothing can hurt him, they take all these poisons and they shove it down his throat, and somehow that poisons him to kill him.
Right.
And I'm kind of like, well, if anything he comes in contact with, he adapts to, then why wouldn't he just adapt to these? Why wouldn't he just have a tolerance to these poisons?
Well, yeah,
he said the point was is that they just found so many different ones he's never been exposed to that it overloads his system. And I go, well, okay, I can understand that, but it didn't really say that in the book. It's just like, hey, here's a whole bunch of poison, shove it down his throat, you know?
Well, and here's the other thing. In this issue, John Dusk, isn't that his name? Mm-hmm. Basically injects his body into him. But I thought that was already null and void before. Like, he had done that before, so he was adapted to that.
But the idea was the poison had broken down his system.
Oh, that's right. So he couldn't react as well.
Right.
That's right.
He was weakened from the poison because his body was trying to adapt and there were too many poisons in the system.
And at this point, they do finally finish him off for good.
Yeah.
But then I think they discover he could regenerate or something. Isn't there a conversation in there? Like, he could come back? I don't know.
Like, they grabbed all his bits and put him in a jar or something just to make sure he doesn't come back or something.
You do see Happy Kitty.
And then Dusk and Happy Kitty go to, like, the other neighborhoods around town. Or they go to the mayor's office.
Yep.
And they, like, run the mayor out of town.
And I'm the boss now. Yeah.
So now he is kind of the head villain. Yep. Like, he's gotten so sure of himself and so full of his own power and abilities that he now declares himself basically the king of the town, and the whole town is under his protection, whether they like it or not.
And basically, the town wanted him to be their protection. You know, so. There we go. You do remember it. You didn't think you remember it.
Well, like I said, it's been a while.
We already talked about Walking Dead. It's the other Two-Face. A lot of Superior.
The Apocalypse has a lot of comics built up in his file, and so he comes in every so often and just buys runs of certain books.
I like
it
that way.
So he can get 4 or 5 issues of one.
Then I can just keep on reading. You know, I don't lose track. What about the Turtles?
I'm not up to date.
Turtles Ongoing's good. I like it. It's fun. It's a lot darker, edgier. People actually get stabbed and there's blood.
I started kind of catching up with it, but the last one I read was where Splinter's been kidnapped by the Foot Clan, and he's fighting against Shredder, trying to escape.
Okay.
And the Turtles are dragging around
very
town
early
the man.
On.
Yeah, it's like issue 12 or something.
Leo has been turned to the dark side, and he fights for the Foot Clan.
Leo turned heel?
That's right.
Oh my gosh!
He's been brainwashed. You do, at the end of this, Bebop and Rocksteady appear.
Whoa.
In issue 27, so that's kind of exciting stuff. I'm not going to give away any spoilers, but basically, you know, there's mutagen abound, and they create Bebop and Rocksteady. Be that it is May, as we may. All right, what do you got?
Like, did they actually say, like, oh, we need a rhino and a warthog to make into monsters?
No, they're just like, we need to make some more mutant warriors, and then all of a sudden, here's Bebop and Rocksteady.
So instead of going, hey, we know it works with cats and turtles,
let's try a rhino.
They just grab random animals.
Yeah.
Hey, nothing's fiercer than a warthog.
Rhino and a warthog.
Ugly, anyway.
Like, why wouldn't they go for, like, an alligator? Or a Black Widow spider?
Ooh.
Instead they go,
a tortoise.
Rosie Perez.
Well, they already had a tortoise, right?
You say Rosie Perez, give her some mutagen, she'd be the toughest monster you've ever fought.
Ethel Merman. All right, what you got?
You know, Peter O'Toole passed away.
I know, we already talked about it. We did a toast.
I know.
Does anybody need a refresher?
Am I the only one that when you read the obituary and it said, Peter O'Toole passes away at 81, you're like, he was only 81?
Yes.
He looked like he was 112.
I know.
All right.
Wasting away.
Anybody else need some more? Woo! Whiskey?
No, I'm going to have a little bit of moonshine here in a minute.
Awesome whiskey.
Yeah, slam that down on the glass counter. That's what the microphone loves to pick up.
Sorry, folks.
Yeah, jack wagon.
Yeah, what he said.
Thank you, sir.
Ooh. All right.
Hey, you have to give it to me. That was a big stack of comic books to talk about, and I ran through it pretty quickly.
You did. You did. That was only 34 minutes. Not 45 like usual, so you trimmed it down a bit.
You hurt me. You hurt me so.
Yeah.
That's what I'm here for.
Hey, did you need some?
Oh, I'm good right now.
Okay.
We're good, folks. Let's see. Cataclysm. Cataclysm is the end of the Ultimate Universe. Galactus. Okay.
How did that go?
Age of Ultron.
Uh-huh.
In Age of Ultron, they time travel and it messes a whole bunch of stuff up. Uh-huh. And they realize that when they time travel, it just like rips holes in reality. One of these holes rips in reality, and Galactus from the Marvel Universe just kind of like pokes his head through and sees the Ultimate Universe and climbs through and just starts chowing down on the Ultimate Universe. In the Ultimate Universe, Galactus was a swarm of robots that would go and like assimilate, like the Borg. Right. Well, the Galactus swarm sees Galactus, and the two kind of smash into each other, and they assimilate together, and it makes like this super-powered mecha Galactus, who's now coming to eat the universe. So he comes to the, he's at the Kree Empire, you know, in the far end of space and whatever, and Captain Marvel is there, and he's like, I've got to save these people, and boom, and Galactus disappears. And they're like, whew. All right, we saved the universe. Everyone on Earth goes, hey, why is there a big purple guy in the sky?
Oh, no.
And Galactus just starts attacking Earth. So he saves the far ends of the universe by just sending them to Earth, not realizing what he's doing. So now everyone on Earth is trying to fight Galactus, and they realize that there's something, his energy reading is weird, you know, all the smart people are doing their calculations, and they realize that his energy signature doesn't match their universe.
Well, like, you're talking about, like, Mr. Fantastic, Mr. Strange, Doctor Strange, and, like, those guys?
Right, Invisible Woman, who's super smart in this universe, and everybody, all the big minds realize,
Tony
and
Stark.
They realize that he's from this parallel dimension. And Mysterio, in the Ultimate Universe, is actually Mysterio from the main Marvel Universe. He's the one who built the first gateway between them.
Okay.
And he was popping in the Ultimate Universe, running a bunch of crime, and then popping back to the regular universe and living a normal life. So, they
Smart
realized...
Man, that's a good game.
It was a pretty good gig.
Now, wouldn't that also punch holes in
that
space fabric?
That did not help. That was bad. Well, part of Mysterio's jumps between the universe sent Peter Parker, before he died in the regular universe, to the Ultimate Universe. After that, Peter Parker was already dead, and Miles was the new...
Right.
So Miles realizes that
that's right, he's like his mentor for
this Galactus is from that Peter Parker universe, so they need to go to the regular Marvel universe and try to find, like, a Reed Richards or somebody who's defeated Galactus, bring him over to try to defeat Galactus in their universe. So they're getting
My
ready...
My brain hurts! This is too much!
So they're gonna send...
I need to be the alternate... Invisible Woman.
They're
going
to send Miles Morales to the regular Marvel Universe to try to find somebody to bring back to save. But it looks like...
I can't take it anymore.
It looks like, though, it's all going to be in vain.
Can you upgrade my two fingers of whiskey to a fist?
Well, maybe. Let's start all over again.
Bend over, I'll get the enema. So it looks like they canceled all the Ultimate books and made them part of the Cataclysm series. So every Ultimate book is now part of the Cataclysm crossover.
So this is the end.
So it looks like they're going to send Miles Morales to the regular Marvel universe, and that Ultimate universe is going to collapse, and he'll never be able to go back. That universe is dead, and he'll be in the regular Marvel universe.
So Miles will still exist.
So Miles will exist in the regular.
But in the regular. But we've already got... So maybe he'll, like...
So there'll be two Spider-Men.
Maybe he'll be amazing Spider-Man. And then we'll have Superior Spider-Man.
That's what it looks like.
And then Superior Spider-Man will probably die eventually, because Doc Ock is evil, and he should die eventually.
Well, because if you watch the last episode of Superior Spider-Man, if you've been reading the recent issues of Superior
you just flip
Spider-Man,
the pages really fast. It's just like,
you know, Callie Cooper has figured out that Doc Ock has taken over.
They're on to him. Well, the Avengers know that he's fishy too.
Yeah, well, but she's been captured by the Green Goblin. The Green Goblin has gone through her journal, and he's realized that Doc Ock is inhabiting the body. So people in the regular Marvel Universe are starting to figure out that that's not Peter Parker. So it looks like, I'm guessing that some shift will happen. Doc Ock will be put in jail, whatever, and there'll just be the one Spider-Man will be Miles Morales of the regular Marvel Universe.
And there will still be no Peter Parker.
Right.
Because Peter Parker is dead.
He is dead.
And you notice, like, his little... His little ghost, like the movie Ghost, his little ghost is not there anymore. It hasn't been there for a while.
Right, because Doc Ock figured out that the ghost of Peter Parker. He figured that was part of Peter's memory stuck in his head. So he did a lobotomy on himself and got rid of the memories of Peter Parker.
That's right.
Comic books, man. It's comic book science.
That is a lot of hate right there when you lobotomize yourself.
That's right.
I'm going to just
chop my own brain apart.
Hey, man, remember that time in sixth grade when you put a dump in your pants while you're giving that speech in front of the class? Totally wiping that out of your memory, man. Totally wiping it out.
Duty!
But it's one of those stories that I really enjoy because it just, it doesn't matter who dies.
Right.
You know, it's like they'll kill people left and right and do all this. And Hercules.
What?
Hercules and Thor are like the only two like gods left.
Oh, from the...
From that whole...
Ultimate.
Ultimate Universe, okay. Yeah. They're like the only ones left.
So why are they left? Because they went on the Rainbow Bridge?
Because they got bitchin' hair. I mean, I don't know.
You can't kill these locks.
They got better agents.
Probably.
Better writers.
Oh, let's see. What else have we been reading? Oh, Forever Evil.
Mm-hmm.
The ongoing DC storyline. One of their crossover books is called Arkham War.
Is it good?
And basically, Batman disappears is part of Forever Evil. All the heroes disappear. All the villains and
they're
Gotham
on their way
City,
to White Castle.
Because that's they're where you gotta go. They're trying to find a White Castle in the morning because White Castle's 24 hours.
Right.
All the villains in Gotham just chop up the city and they have their own like neighborhood. Poison Ivy has her own section of town.
Right.
Penguin has his section of town.
Ivy Land.
Two Face has his section.
Glacier
of town.
Land. Wasteland.
Okay. All right. So Bane realizes that with no, like, Batman is the only person that's ever been
able
to stop him.
I'll take Schwartz for 500, Alec.
He decides he's going to go to Gotham and use this opportunity to take over Gotham.
Right.
So he goes to Blackgate Penitentiary, where all the, like, baddest of the bad dudes are,
mm-hmm.
and builds himself an army
right.
to take on everyone in Gotham City mm-hmm. and unite it under his control. All right, so in issue 3...
Maskland.
He's talking to Penguin. He's made this alliance with Penguin. Like, Penguin is the
That's
one...
That's right, and he turns on him, doesn't he?
No. What happens is Penguin says, you're never going to win this war because none of these guys fear you. Because the only person they fear is the Bat. For no matter who they've ever fought, no matter what plan they've always had, it's always been foiled by Batman. They don't care about anybody else, and as long as he's gone, they don't care.
Right.
And so Bane realizes he has to use the legend of the Bat to his benefit. So he
actually, League of Shadows.
He basically builds himself a bat suit.
For 500.
An amped up bat suit, and he starts
Becoming
attacking everybody.
Batman.
He starts attacking as the Batman. So now the legend of the Batman is not this guy who fights crime and saves everybody. He's the guy who, he's the villain, the ultimate
the
villain.
The real League of
who
Shadows.
Defeats all the other villains. So now Batman is the ultimate evil of Gotham City, not the hero of Gotham City.
Oh, cool.
City. It's kind of a neat twist on using the legend to his benefit in taking over Gotham City.
Sounds like I need to pick up for... I've only read the first issue. So
it's a neat... Well, this is just the Arkham War
you had me
like,
hello,
tie-in but... series, but it's actually pretty good.
You had me at bat.
You had me at bat. And then, man, I was the deal with Seal.
What you looking at, Willis?
Yeah... I'm done. Time to go home.
You're done.
This is a good show. It's nice. Great. Yeah, it's past your bedtime.
What,
so
we need more meat sticks for you or something?
Actually, we're at 43 minutes, so let's take a quick break.
Okay.
And then we come back.
We got some stuff to talk about.
Well, no, when we come back, we will talk about the Star Trek annual.
Ooh.
We'll talk about Super 1, 2, and 3.
Ooh.
We'll talk about, what's the other thing?
Protocol.
Oh, Protocol Orphans 1 and 2. And we will just talk about... the orgy you went to last Tuesday night.
Was it
Tuesday?
No.
You were like, oh, I'm going to this house party, put
no,
on the keys
was,
in the fishbowl.
It was Amway.
It was an Amway orgy?
Yeah.
So you got a free bar of soap.
I have a bunch of soap right now. I have cases of soap in my bathroom.
Hey, you don't want to leave an orgy dirty.
They're
all, that's all
they're
saying.
All monogrammed, though. You get a monogrammed if you buy so many cases.
I get mine stamped with, like, a lucky horseshoe.
Oh, I guess I could have done that, too, huh? Yeah. Instead of spending the extra $30 a bar.
Uh-huh. Skull and crossbones on.
Well, no, they did my face.
They did your face? I can believe that. I can see your face. Someone's done something to it. All right, we're going to take a break. We'll be right back.
Unfortunate souls.
You want some more whiskey?
Awesome, more whiskey.
Better do that. Over here. Over here, big guy. Give me some love.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Just a splash. Freshen up there.
I just want to.
There's
wanna,
the Daryl Hannah.
Is that bottle like, almost gone?
No, it's
almost. No, that's
gone.
Good.
Yeah, there's about an inch left. A
couple
in this
glasses
bottle
left there.
Maker's Mark.
We've got Zachariah Harris's backup.
Actually, I'm gonna have some of the Old Smoky
by the way,
moonshine.
We'll be traveling
oh yeah,
down,
moonshine.
I think I might.
We'll be down the Lonesome Highway here before too long. Riding.
So should I take a shot of the Old Smoky and then chase it with the Makers? Is that how this is supposed to work?
Well, they call that out of the turkey's ass. And
I'm not sure the Makers will do you any good.
Or should I start with the Makers and then chase?
Just
with
don't
the,
mix it; it might explode.
Yeah. Oh, it could be a tiz.
Oh. Oh. You sniff them both at the same time, you forget your childhood.
Right.
You don't need those memories.
Oh, whew. That was ugly.
Oh.
Oh, Jesus, oh. What are you doing? Oh, baby Jesus. Oh, baby Jesus. Sweet baby Jesus.
So, now that we're back to the show.
Oh.
My tongue is on
this
fire.
This is going to get interesting.
It's going to get nitro. We've now, we're up to 11.
Oh yeah. My gosh, that hurts.
I bet. Mm-hmm. Dirt just drank moonshine like cough syrup.
The moonshine chaser.
Yeah.
I actually shot two fingers of Maker's Mark and then just a couple big gulps of moonshine.
All right.
Oh, you graduated from fingers to fist, just a punch in the face. That's called a punch. A punch of moonshine.
Do you remember that Simpsons where Homer keeps getting hit in the stomach with the cannonball?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And then there's a... Yeah. Mm-hmm. But luckily you're sitting here and you've got that absorbent sweater on, so... When it all comes back out. Be ready. When okay.
Better get me a bucket and a cleaning lady.
Just a little bit more.
It's wafer thin. Okay, no, so we are going to talk about... some kind of out of the ordinary independent.
We're
going to
talk about
who
Yoda's real father is? Is that
yes.
What we're doing right now?
Yep.
Oh, God, that tasted terrible.
Easy.
There's a little bit of Rangoon in that one.
Ooh, wow.
Broccoli.
Let's ease into Orphans. Protocol, Orphans, number one.
All right.
You forced
me
to read
this. Did you
this.
Read just number one, or did you read one and two?
I read one and two. All
right.
And basically...
Which one did you read first?
Well, to kind of summarize a little bit, you find out after issue two that these are, I guess, you're guessing are basically orphan children that are taken in and learn how to be assassins?
The government, kind of similar to Happy Kitty.
Right.
The government has these... you know, spy agencies, whatever, where they take children who have no parents, who have been orphaned, and the government adopts the children, basically, and trains them to be assassins.
Right.
So their direct commanding officer, they refer to as father.
Mm-hmm. And then there's the grandparents.
Yeah, the grandparents are like the hidden...
Right.
You always see them in silhouette on the video screens.
The Interpol.
Who are the ones who are actually directing everything.
Right. So...
That's why you shouldn't trust old people.
Yeah, like 40-year-olds.
Wait a minute.
Watch it.
You're not 40.
I'm not like...
Yeah,
so.
Well, no. I mean, old guy here. Yeah, definitely.
We've talked about a few... They talk about like a few of the character highlights. Like you have the one kid that's probably like a 13-year-old kid. Here. That guy.
You think he's that young? I figured he was just like a young
person.
Looking adult.
His skin is very
or maybe he's
fair.
A little person.
A little runty dude.
Then you have the what's the kind of darker skinned woman that hits on basically everybody?
You mean the well endowed female in the
she
skin
calls
tight
me
drunk
mother.
At like 3 a.m?
Yeah, her.
Oh yeah.
And
a lot of people have called you a drunk at 3 a.m.
No, she calls me, and she is drunk.
Oh.
I she the says the way. Most awful things.
And you love her for it.
I do. It's okay.
Let me ask you, Dirk, what inspired you to start picking this comic book up?
It's written by the same guy who did 28 Days Later.
Oh, okay.
Michael Allen Nelson.
Well, the first issue is all about basically they're on a mission and then they discover
they're on like
it's
a training
false
mission.
Alarm. Yeah.
And they're going in for a training mission, and a lot of them are, it's that standard thing where they're like, why are we doing another training mission? We should be ready to go out in the field now.
Right.
You know, this is stupid that they're wasting our time on this, and they do whatever, and then one of the agents ends up dead.
At the end of the training
mission. At the end of the training mission. And it's like, okay, if this was a training mission, how did this guy end up dead?
Right.
You know, obviously there's something more going on here that we're not being told about. You go into the second issue, and it's like a couple years later, and the team was kind of disbanded in the sense that they aren't working actively, but they've all been put into these different roles in society, like they're in their sleeper cell. You know, so one guy is working as like a Starbucks cashier, and the other guy is like all this money. He supposedly has like these rich parents and this fake life that they made for him, all this stuff. And there are two agents, the hot chick and one of the other dudes are kind of seeing each other on the sly.
Right.
But no one's supposed to know about it. So, you know, that's going to add to some intrigue later
on. Well, the little guy gets it at the end of this. He's the one that.
The start menu?
Yeah, the start menu.
And so in the second issue, they're brought back out a couple years later. They're brought back out from their, you know, sleeper cell. They're being activated again. And this time they have to go on this real mission. And the father is complaining to the grandparents that he doesn't have all the information of what's going on for this mission. And they're telling him he doesn't need to know. You know, it's,
right.
You know, this is how government agencies kind of, you know, screw each other over and whatever. And these agents, who are these orphan kids that are now these assassins or whatever, have to pull off, they have to capture this guy, this rich guy. They're gonna infiltrate his plane. They're gonna act as like the
right.
crew on the plane and kill the pilot and kill his guards, and they have to take him because there's some upcoming terrorist attack, and they know that somehow he's involved. So they, you know, pull off this thing, this whole big, you know, movie stunt spectacle where they
take
out
the guards.
Where
they've got their air masks on, but the rest of the group.
Right,
doesn't.
They're supposed to depressurize the cabin, so then they go in with their masks, and it didn't depressurize, so something's gone wrong, and they finally get the guy, and they extract him, and they take him down to the holding cell, and they torture him to get the information out of him, and it turns out he has no information. He's supposed to be the one who's behind this terrorist attack. He doesn't know anything about it, and they
right.
believe him. They're like, okay,
there's a red herring.
There's something wrong here, and they go, well, what about his girlfriend? Does she know anything? And they go to check on her. She's gone. She's escaped. She's broken out of her whatever. She's escaped the thing.
He was
so,
a red herring.
Right. So there's like this other layer of intrigue of what's going on besides what you know and what you've been told. And I just like stories that unfold that way.
Mm-hmm.
Like the original Two Guns, how it had that
right.
double cross, triple cross
right.
thing. Like there's,
and it's not like overcomplicated or, you know, like so much depth. You know, it's just fun. You know, it still has enough that it keeps you going, but it's just fun.
And there's always, like, the one secret that you don't know the answer to, but you know that at some point it'll be revealed.
Right.
So there's always, someone is always one step ahead of you as the reader, because you're where these characters are. So you know that there's someone, you know, manipulating them, controlling them. You know eventually they're going to figure it out, but in your mind, while you're reading, you're trying to put the clues together and figure it out just like they are. So I like stories that are layered like that, that unfold that way, where you don't get all the answers at the end of that issue. You know, there's always that hook that kind of brings you back because you want to figure out the story.
Who's the publisher for this again?
Boom.
Boom, okay. Well, good for Boom, because I haven't been reading a lot of Boom Studios other than Invincible.
No, that's Image.
Or Image, I'm sorry. I don't think I read any Boom right now.
They do Hero Bear and the Kid. Have you been reading Hero
no,
Bear
I don't
and the Kid?
No, I haven't read Hero Bear and the Kid, no.
My son likes that one a lot.
Yeah.
You should be reading that.
No, no.
I don't know. What else has Boom been doing? They do a story called Hit, which has been all right.
And when they did 28 Days Later, that
I mean,
was...
That, yeah, we like that one.
Hit. Okay. Let's talk about Super.
Okay. What about Super? Why do you want me to read this?
What are you talking about? You asked me to read this. You kind of gave some clues about why you like Super earlier. I think you stated that the characters are unique.
Mm.
They're not like copycats. Like, you know, this guy's kind of like Batman, you know?
Right. There's no... Like, for instance, they have a character who runs very fast, and they call him the Streak. Right. So you're like, okay, that's the Flash.
But here's the thing. He has to take off all of his clothes to do it. So
he doesn't have
there's
like,
a lot of humor
protective
with Super.
Aura. So he just has, like, basketball pants where he rips them off, and he just runs around naked. Because nothing is going to survive, you know, anyway, because he gets super hot, you know, whatever, as he's speeding around. So that's the Streak. And he's really kind of a jerk. He's conceited.
He's a douchebag. Like, he always makes really, you know, stupid comments. Oh, and he always saves the women first.
Right, because they're hot, like, you know.
You know, he'll save all the cocktail waitresses first, and then he'll, like...
But
know.
The book...
I know this guy.
Here, let's start kind of a superficial level. This is from Unlikely Hero Studio, which is a company you've never heard of before. The first issue was backed on Kickstarter, so it was one of those where they just had to raise their own funds, crowdsourcing. The artwork, when you look at this book, the artwork does not... It does not look like some random indie book. Like, the artwork in the book... It's
very
really,
professional.
Yeah. Like, that was one of the things that first impressed me, because, of course, you look at... A lot of times you pick up an indie book and you go, well, I'm sure the story is good and the artwork will be there, you know, a lot of times on indie books.
Yeah.
You pick up Super and it looks like the most... It could be from Marvel or DC.
Well, you can tell by the sketch art that they're very much into detail and the layout of the personality of the character.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's consistent.
Like, whoever's drawing this, Zach, what's his name? Like, he is very good at putting emotion, you know... subtle ways that people look with their eyes. And...
Oh, Blood Death. He's like my favorite. He's like the Punisher.
He's like the you know, image Marvel to, 90s.
But he has to like give
of.
His monologue, you know, like it's justice. He's almost like kind of like a Dread too, you know, it's like everything's justice. We're doing it for justice. We're gonna kill for justice. I don't know. I like him.
But the main character is that female
Blitz.
And she's got a boyfriend who's also some sort of superpowered person.
Which we find out later is...
He's somewhat villainous.
He's a villain.
But they don't know about each other's secret
identities.
He's
the Black Ant, I think, or something like that?
No,
right?
The Ant is one of the good guys.
Oh, no.
He's part of that bank robbing crew. But anyway, so the story kind of centers around her, and she's like your kind of everyday
Furious
character.
Fire Ant is the other guy. Sorry.
She's trying very hard to be as good of a superhero as she can be, and... You know, she's the one that you... She, like, idolizes the super powerful ones, and so...
What is the society that, like, her father was a part of? It's like the Justice League, sort of.
Yeah,
it's like
the...
I don't know.
I don't have it sitting in front of me, so I can't look it up. But one thing I will say about these books is that the stories are dense. Like, when you read through it, there's a lot of dialogue... There's a lot of, like, her narration going on. There's more in one issue of these books at, I think it's $3.99.
Mm-hmm.
There's more going on than in any issue.
Well, the first issue was, like, 50 pages.
Yeah, I know. It's like you read a Marvel or DC book and you're done in, like, 5 minutes, you know?
Right.
But these take, like, 20 minutes, half hour to read through because there's so much going on in the artwork. There's so much going on in the dialogue. There's so much background and depth to the characters.
Oh, and there's some cool characters. Like, this, What's the one character, when he drinks alcohol, he becomes enraged.
Right. Like, he just gets drunk and mad, and when he starts getting mad, that's when he gets strong.
Right.
And
so,
breaks
like,
up.
When, like, you know, when it starts, you know, things start going down, he, like, you know, downs some tequila, and then he gets all... But he doesn't, like, turn into, like, this monstrous person. He's just ripped. Like, he just becomes ripped. He's this little guy with, like, a Jufro. And then he becomes ripped and he becomes like a Wolverine and just goes nuts. What was it? There's a couple other funny characters. And then, you know, there's Blood Death, who we talked about.
But they also act in very realistic ways. Like, if you would imagine, like, if we as a group suddenly had superpowers, there's always the guy who's like, he's like, yeah, let's get ready to fight. And then he sees the bad guy and he's like, someone's got to help these people over here. You know, it's like, I'll help the civilians. You guys go attack the big monster.
Or, like, they call a meeting, and there's the one guy who just showed up from the bar. You know,
yeah, and
he's
like,
drunk.
Hungover, and he's like, oh, God, are we going to do this now? And the guy who's funding their super team you see him.
He's kind of like Mr. Fantastic.
Well, he looks like Mr. Fantastic because he's older and he's got like the white, you know, over the temples in his hair. But his personality is not Mr. Fantastic. He's conceited. He's. Mm-hmm.
And he refers to that, like everything he's doing is. What does he say? It's like the science or the.
He does it for the science?
The science of it. You know, he's always doing stuff for the science. He's a cheese ball. It's like,
like, it's almost, if you take one of those, like, really good comedies, like, It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia or something like that, and made it superheroes, mm-hmm. like, that's kind of where this book would fit. There's profanity and sex jokes and whatever, but plus there's that superhero, you know, kicking the bad guy's ass and all that kind of stuff. And then in issue three, the main villain, in issue three...
The plague.
I was looking at the normal version of the guy before he changes, and I'm looking at him. I'm going, that looks like Lance Henriksen. And I sent the guy an email who wrote the comic because he puts his email address in the back. And I was like, did you just put Lance Henriksen in issue three of this book? And he's like, all I can do is smile and say that this is based on no person's living or dead. Any similarity is coincidental, blah, blah, blah. But if we were going to voice like an animated series, I know who I'd want to do the voices. You know, so obviously they drew Lance Henriksen into the book, which I think is great. Like, I love when they take a character, character actor like that and make him into a character. Like, I just think that's the neatest thing. And it's drawn, like, the artwork is good enough in this book that you can spot him. Right. There's a part in the book where the guy who's in charge of everything, the rich cheeseball, he's at a party at, like, this bar with all these different scientists, and you see, like, Peabody and Sherman in the background having a conversation, and, you know, I think Robbie the Robot was in one of the scenes, and... all that kind of stuff going on. So there's all this stuff happening in the foreground and the background at the same time.
There you go.
Oh, Doc Brown.
Yeah.
Is back there. There's a troll from Critters or whatever.
Oh, and the Doctor Who.
Yeah, there's a Doctor Who. Actually, there's a couple Doctor Who's over there, aren't there?
Well, in the police box.
I mean, yeah, so you could just sit
Look, there's the robot from...
Tom Servo.
Yeah, Tom Servo.
So, yeah, I mean, this is one of those things where you can...
The aliens...
You can just get lost in all the details that they put in the background as well as the actual story. And so, like I said, for the $3.99 that you pay for this book, you're getting so much more than anything else that you get from any other publisher. So that's why I said, you know, when I got the first one, it was just kind of like, well, you know, we ordered a couple for the store, so I'll just kind of flip through it just to see, you know, what it was. And I was just amazed at how well... the overall package of this book is.
Oh, tonight, Lloyd Brown Award for Scientific Excellence.
And you see Doc Brown at one point with the thing on his head.
Fun stuff.
Yeah, so I like Super a lot.
So, I mean, to sum up what's going on, basically, the plague was part of the science... What was it? The U... What do they call it? The U science or the... Basically, the scientific team came up with this energy source that was limitless. One of the scientists wanted to kind of do some early experiments. He experimented on himself. Everything went wrong. There was an explosion. They thought he was dead. Turns out he comes back 10 years later. He's this plague dude who's been seeking out the Mr. Fantastic knockoff guy that we can't remember
Archer.
His name.
Archer. Yeah, and, like the show Archer.
To basically seek revenge, and that's where we're at. You know, and they're fighting this plague guy. In fact, Archer has this massive robot dude that's fighting the plague man, and it's pretty absurd. It's fun. It's absurd. It's different. I think, like you said, it's unique. They didn't just copycat. Although they did a little bit. You know, the ant guy kind of reminds you of Adam, sort of.
Really? Because I was thinking Spider-Man.
Huh.
I mean, it's, you know.
Right. So, I mean, it's unique. It's fun. It's a little gritty. It's dirty.
There's Lance Henriksen.
There's foul language.
Right. Nice. That's pretty clean.
It's a
clean depiction.
Did you get this feeling kind of like Invincible, like were you ready for the bottom to fall out?
Well,
waiting for something like super sinister, evil to happen, and like
I'm waiting for Blitz to find out that her boyfriend's a dirtbag who's the villain, and that's going to be a setup for some sort of confrontation between the two of them. Like, right. I know that that's coming.
Like, she has a secret identity, and her boyfriend is just kind of like loser. She considers him kind of like a loser deadbeat, but he's actually that's his secret identity. He's actually a villain.
But I mean, if you look at the artwork in it, it doesn't look like some random.
No.
You know, I mean, it looks very clean and professional. The coloring is well done. All the characters, you know, a lot of times in books from indie comics, they have like the one face.
Right.
It's like all the characters have the one face, but this one's got glasses and this one's wearing a hat, and that's how you tell them apart.
Right.
But like all of these characters look consistent from panel to panel. They look like themselves. I mean, I was just impressed from top to bottom by this book. It just, for something that I knew nothing about, we just ordered a couple copies for the store just because.
Yeah, actually, I think can you get me the back issues, the last three?
I'm sure they're sold out now, I can try to order them through Diamond.
I might collect it. It seems fun. It has that potential. It feels kind of like how I felt with Invincible when I started.
It could be one of those books
unique.
That like everybody will discover it like when it hits issue 10 or something, like after a trade comes out, and everyone will go, "Oh my, I should have been reading this from day one." Right. Be like, "I was reading it from day one." You know.
You should have been listening to the show.
That's right.
Okay.
Moving all right along. Then. So,
in summary, you know, it's
so
only
in summary, super
deep,
super is thumbs up, and I'm going to definitely keep buying it. I love it. Next book.
Next book. Let's talk about Star Trek Con and then lead into the annual.
Okay.
So what'd you think of Con number 3?
Let's see.
In this you get more insight of basically what is it, Sector?
The eugenics wars, like all of the kids who were part of that experiment that made Khan have taken over the world.
Right.
And they
everything
all have their,
the movie skipped.
Well, yeah, like basically, okay, here's the, in the first issue of Khan, he's at trial for what happened in the darkness. Okay. So they have Khan on trial and they go, here's the thing that we don't understand. According to our historical records, this is Khan Noonien Singh. And they pull up a picture, and it's Ricardo Montalban. And they go...
With the
and
bun
now,
in the back of his head.
And he's wearing, like, the red, like, Indian suit, whatever. And then they turn to... Cumberbatch, and they're like, you don't look like him. So what happened between here and here that explains this big change? So he starts recounting the story. And if you remember... In Star Trek Next Generation, in the first episode with Q, he talks about how there was a eugenics war on Earth that happened in like the late 90s.
Right.
And it shows like these guys in like silver spacesuits.
What they call like Sector 13 or something?
Well, no, that comes in the movie.
Okay.
Sector 31,
right,
which is like their covert group. But in Next Generation, in that first episode, they talk about this war that happened sometime in the past on Earth in the late 90s, because that show came out in the late 80s. So they were like, in the 90s, you know, a decade away. Who knows what could happen? You know? Well, this story is actually telling how that war happened, and Khan was part of that storyline. So it's pulling
basically
threads from
in this,
different parts of...
In this, you learn, like, millions of people have died in this eugenic war.
Mm-hmm. Well, that was one of the big things, is that...
That's
this
what
war,
united all the countries.
Right. This war happened, and it wiped out a whole bunch of humanity, and then the rest of humanity swelled up back together, and that
created a federation.
Right. Yeah.
Federation of planets.
Well, it started... whatever the Earth Alliance was.
Right.
And then they made first contact, and then, yeah, blah, blah. So anyway, so they're pulling all these little things from different eras of the Star Trek lore and building this story together, and they're also explaining, somehow, they will explain why he doesn't look like the guy from Fantasy Island anymore, and why he looks like the guy from Sherlock. You know, they have to, they're bridging that gap. So they're...
And RoboCop's in it.
Well, RoboCop is in the movie.
Well, but yeah, it's right there.
Yeah. So they're doing this job of trying to at least appease the fans. You know, all these people, I can't believe that they rebooted and they're throwing away all this history of Star Trek. And they're trying to say, no, we respect all of this history.
I think
and they're trying to tie it all together.
I really enjoy all this revival of the old stuff.
Yeah.
Exactly.
I think they've done it really quite respectfully.
I think if you, like, I didn't like Enterprise when that was on TV. I couldn't watch that at all.
They bring back kind of like the...
It was like the early days of...
Kirk.
Right.
200 years.
Right.
And then Voyager, to me, was never really that great of a show. Like, it was, they're in a ship, they're in space again. Deep Space Nine.
What?
I loved it because there was this ongoing arc that went through all of the seasons where they actually... It felt like... The final episode wrapped up what was happening in the first episode, and everything in between had its place. Where you had that giant war going on, you had the political intrigue, you had the Cardassians and the Jem'Hadar, and all these little, you know, pieces that were part of this overall mosaic. But you know, everybody loved Next Generation because that was the thinking sci-fi show of the time, and you did get the early episodes where they would blow up somebody's head, and you know, you get the neat stuff like that. But I kind of felt like as it Next Generation ended, Deep Space Nine ended, and then after that, it just kind of, like, fizzled, you know, on and kind of disappeared. And so when they rebooted and they brought everything back, it was like, oh, Star Trek's back. Like, now it's, you know, you can get into it again. And they have so much reverence for the original material that you start to kind of go back and you're like, you know, maybe I didn't appreciate the original series as much as I should.
Well, and have you seen the redos of the original material?
The new, like, high definition?
Well, they cleaned
up the special effects.
Yes, no, those are great. It's on MeTV.
The colors are beautiful. The special effects are beautiful.
You can get them on Blu-ray now in the high definition and watch them. Yeah.
I'm thinking about getting that collection. I think they have a gift set.
Yeah. It's a lot of money.
It's like $60.
That's for, like, one season, though.
Is it really?
Yeah.
Wow.
A little more expensive than you
thought. I thought it was for everything. Mm-hmm. Which this leads us into what's coming up next, right? What we're going to talk about.
Oh, the annual?
The annual.
Star Trek annual. All right. So first, before we talk about the actual story of the annual, we should probably discuss the concept of the annual.
Right.
Hey, turn your phone off.
Yeah, I didn't realize it was
still
on.
Turn your phone off. Great.
Hopefully I didn't mess up the mic.
You ruined half the show.
That would suck.
All right. So what was the concept of the Star Trek annual?
They're taking, I hope I'm doing this right, they're taking frames from an original episode that wasn't aired.
No.
And turning it
into... No.
Now, when I was a kid, you could buy these Star Trek comics that were...
The photo books.
Yeah. Exactly.
That's
exactly
what this is.
But what they've done here, what those were... is they took episodes of the TV show and they took the still frames and put the word balloons on it so you could read the episodes you saw on TV because back then they didn't have, you know, the VHS you watched on TV and when it was gone. So what they've done, John Byrne, who's an artist, who's done Fantastic Four, he's done Superman, he's done, you know, everything in the world of comics, he's been at IDW making his own, you know, creator-owned stuff for the last couple of years, and he's a huge fan. They have the license for Star Trek, and he said, I'd like to do an experiment where I want to write an original episode of Star Trek set in the time period it aired, but instead of drawing it, he took still frames from a bunch of different episodes, put them in Photoshop, changed the backgrounds, changed the lighting, put two characters in the same scene that weren't necessarily same scene, and wrote an original story set in that 5-year mission.
Nice.
So when you read it, it looks like you're reading one of those photo books of an original episode, but of course this is a brand new story that he's written that goes back to events that happen in the pilot with Gary Mitchell, who gets the superpowers and is left buried alive on Delta Vega. They start getting these signals from Delta Vega, and they go back to investigate and see, well, you know, we thought Gary Mitchell was dead, so they go back and they find that actually
he is not an entity of the planet now.
He's like a ghost. He's like a superpowered ghost on this planet.
So this was an actual episode?
No, this was never an actual episode.
That's what I thought. That's what I was getting at. I thought that.
But it's not a lost episode. Like, it's not like someone wrote a script and they just never made it. He's right. This is a 2013 written story, but he's using photos from the original series to put this story together.
Turret, the explosion and fire.
So if you never had access to the original TV show, you know, and you were reading those photo books, this would be in line with those photo books as a missing episode.
I would have believed you if you would have said that this was like a recreation of one of the original episodes. Mm. Because it... excuse me.
Yeah.
It has that feel where basically Captain Kirk has to like recreate what's going on, and he decides like that, you know, at one point he has to be at this one spot and teleport back, and it just, you know what I'm saying? It had that kind of deductive, I'm struggling here.
I'm not sure where you're going either, so.
Well, it just, that format, it had that same kind of classic format.
It's built in that same kind of three-act, like the old TV show was.
Right.
Where you had the setup, you had the fall, and then you had the, conquering, whatever, coming back. But yeah,
I thought it was interesting, like, they actually did talk to Starfleet, too, in this, too. Which is, like, the Vampirilla.
Yeah, and she was a chick with hot hair.
That's Gene Roddenberry's wife.
Was it really? Oh,
she was the first officer in the pilot that didn't air. And
she's
they took
the only
her out
actor to have been in every series of Star Trek.
Because she was the voice of the ships later on. And she was also Troy's mom in Next Generation. And
and she's always been the voice of the computer.
Huh.
So when they're talking to Starfleet, she was actually the first officer with Captain Pike in that storyline. And the executives at NBC were like, oh, you can't have a woman... He's
a
first officer. There's no way women will ever be in charge of a starship or a company
of military stuff
in political office. What are you crazy?
It's kind of funny to see Spock like full of emotion in that too.
Mm-hmm. Well, because that was young Spock.
Yes,
he wasn't fully
Spock,
in control yet.
Yes.
But yeah, I mean, this was a neat kind of look back at that era. They had a lot of that dialogue and. A lot of the,
it's very clean, too.
Like and it also has some of that cheesy special effects like you would expect to see. Like, at one point, they do this mind meld, and they're going through the memories. So he uses this kind of, like, reverse colorization like you saw in a lot of stuff in the 60s and 70s.
Oh, right.
And it's trying to be weird.
Like it's...
Yeah.
Like it's all psychedelic and crazy.
Yeah.
Oh, look, it's crazy. We're having a flashback.
Oh my gosh, everything's red.
Whoa. Oh, my God, it's red and blue.
Well, you
oh
were talking God about that episode where they... picked up the hippie hitchhikers.
Yeah, we were talking about that earlier before the show started. So yeah, I think overall he's
actually
really
I would like
job
to like read more of these.
I'm just curious how long it took him
excuse me
to find like all the right panels. It's like, well, I need Kirk talking, but he has to be facing to the left. You know, like fast forwarding through episode to episode,
to
like
find that one facing
like,
the left.
Like, oh, he's looking the right way, but he's wearing the wrong shirt.
Huh.
So I have to find one with the right shirt and then Photoshop them together.
Or flip
and
the.
He's standing in engineering, and I need him to be on the bridge, so he's got to cut him out.
So
and,
do you think they like had like? Do you think they found a shot with all three of them together, or do you think they like
possibly
put them together? Or
I'd say from looking at that picture, that's...
Looks like they put them together.
Kirk and Spock talking to each other, and then McCoy they just kind of threw in the background.
Threw in there.
But yeah, I mean, he did a really good job on it.
I think it was a lot of fun. What a great annual.
Mm. And when you think about it, in
your
mind...
Did I get a paper copy of this?
I don't think so.
Uh-oh.
It was like an $8...
Oh, really?
Yeah. You get a bit of a discount on the digital when you buy it through the Comics Plus, but yeah, it was like a $7.99.
What are you getting cheap on us now?
No, I'd buy.
He has a lot of comics,
but I'm playing catch up.
Yeah, he'll pay.
Let's put it this way: I'm spending
we'll
like $30 a week, and I'm just barely putting a dent in my.
It's like it refills almost as fast as he empties it out.
So that's why I just buy runs.
Do I need to turn up the heat?
Yeah, if you could go for like a kneecap.
Like
or
a bookie.
Phone.
Are you a collector? A comic book bookie?
You know what? You're right. Work over the wife. But leave the man and work
over the wife. Yeah,
because he's got to earn a living, you know.
Be a shame if anything happened to your garage.
Oh. Collect the insurance. You split the money.
No, you have to use all that money on the comics.
That's right.
You know, you got a nice car, Mr. Leopakis. That car is going to end up in a fireball at the bottom of a cliff.
I think you're going to pay off your comic book tab today. I think that's going to
really
happen.
Do.
As soon as that
got
check,
this feeling.
You get that check from Geico and it's coming to us, buddy.
So, I mean, that was kind of the highlight of the show, I think, was just the Star Trek stuff. I was kind of excited about it. I love what they're doing with the original recreations. There we go. Oh, Seth Phaser's is stunned.
Yeah, Turn Ferguson was, brought his...
That was just a stun setting. So
you know it's a party when
How old is that?
When, you know, somebody brings a phaser.
What is it, 09?
You bought that in 09?
I got it for Christmas.
Christmas?
No.
Whenever the first movie came out?
Yeah.
The remake movie?
Yeah. The redo.
Oh, not from 1979?
Yeah. No. That was a model kit from AMT.
Well, actually...
Was it a snap tight? Or
no,
did you actually use
you
glue?
Had to glue it
I've
together.
Seen some of Turd Ferguson's models that he's got. He's got some pretty cool stuff.
You ever done a ship in a bottle?
Yeah, it was Jaws.
Nice.
You're going to need a bigger bottle.
Clever. I think we need a bigger bottle.
It was pretty fine gear I brought out there, but that bastard shark made a meal out of it.
All right. Before we empty the bottle of Maker's Mark, is there anything else you got? Or is this wrapping up this episode of Comaholics?
Whoo!
Well, the huckster has fallen asleep about six times.
Good boy.
I don't blame
episode.
Him, you know. It's
getting late.
I think we covered a lot. I think we did it. That's a full evening. A platter, if you will. A platter of comics.
A plethora.
Platter.
How sorry, big is a plethora?
Hefe, do
I'm
you know
sorry,
what a plethora
Waffle.
Is?
My intellect is not as developed as yours. I do not know.
Oh
what
man,
a
we're gonna have to watch
is.
That now. All right, pull up YouTube. We're gonna have to watch
blow
that.
The man
now.
Down,
oh look,
hear me, blow
look,
the
it's
man
a
down.
It's a mail plane.
How do you know it's a mail plane?
You see his little balls hanging.
A mail plane.
Farley,
my
Farley,
little
Farley,
buttercup
Farley.
Has the sweetest smile.
Whippoorwill.
Over here. Hey, guys. Over here.
Farley.
Hey, guys. Up here. This way. Wow. All right. All right, guys. Well, that's going to wrap it up for this episode of Comaholics here on PopCultureNetwork.com. Don't forget,
we are... The 3-2 Amigos.
You can find more of the show at comaholics.com, which is part of the Pop Culture Network. If you want to send us an email, you can send it to apocalypse@comaholics.com or dirt@popculturenetwork.com. If you want to leave a message on the forums, you can go to jointheforums.com, the official forums of the Pop Culture Network, or you can call our 24-hour voicemail line. It's area code
217-953-4099.
No, that's that other guy.
No, that's Jenny. Okay. That's her number. 217-953-4025. 24-hour voicemail. You can always call, leave a message. It's not an answering machine, so we can't hear you. So don't call and go, hey, guys, hello, are you there? Pick up, because there's nobody there to hear you. But you can call us at 2 o'clock in the morning and leave a up to 10 minutes on the voicemail, and it'll
record. I only
it.
Need 30 seconds.
That's what she said. Okay. Thanks for listening, everybody. We're ashamed of this episode, but we did it anyway. We're glad that you are here to hear this, and we will talk to you again after a while.